Okay, thanks, guys. Good afternoon. First, want to express our appreciation for you guys coming to our session. We know that attending Tech Ed takes time and money, so this is a great chance for us to interface with our users, our customers, and talk to you about what's coming and hear what's on your mind. So appreciate that. On a personal note, I appreciate an all-expenses-paid trip to Spain, so I'm grateful about that, too. So today, here's the couple things that we're going to be chatting about. We're going to spend a few minutes chatting about the exchange release cycle. We'll talk about the investments we're making, how and when we release them, and how we get those into the hands of users, and the various paths for doing that. And we'll spend several minutes talking about either newly released, in the process of releasing, or soon to be released features in Exchange. And we have a whole grundle of those to talk about. And then, of course, at the end, we want to leave time for questions and hopefully some answers. Feel free to interrupt us if there's something burning in the middle of the session. In general, though, if you can wait, we'd appreciate it. We'd cover a lot of ground, and it would be great if we could get through all the material, as various people are probably here to hear various topics. So start with everyone's favorite slide, the slide that the lawyers put together. I think the succinct way to go through this slide is that we're going to talk about the world as we know it as best we can. Things change, specifically in our industry. Things change a lot. And so some of the features we talk about may change. Some of the dates we talk about may change. Some of the art or interfaces we talk about may, in fact, change. Pricing, packaging, that's not my department. I work in engineering. That will get disclosed through the established channels. And then finally, as I said, we'll talk about the release cadence for a couple minutes. So I'm going to start by asking you guys some questions. So I'm going to flash a few pictures of some famous people. When you recognize them, go ahead and shout out their names. Einstein, okay. Walt Disney, very good. Da Vinci, very good. Bruce Lee, absolutely. Abraham Lincoln, very good. The king of rock and roll. All right, so what's one thing all of these gentlemen have in common? What's that?
They're all dead.
They're all dead. Perfect. You're my straight man. They are all dead. Well, in spite of what the conspiracy theorists may say, you know, about Disney's cryogenically preserved head or Elvis's fake death, we believe that these guys are all dead. Now, in a similar vein, all sorts of pundits have been prophesying the untimely death of email for years. This is just a quick sampling of articles. You've seen several, you've read several. But when you look at the data, nothing could actually be further from the truth. As a matter of fact, between 2009 and 2013, the volume of emails sent every day more than doubled to over 500 billion messages a day. And it's not just old people or people who have been doing it forever. When you look at the demographics, people in the prime of their careers are the most significant constituency. They send the most messages, 20 to 40 years old. And the second most significant constituency are people who are still in school and ready to embark on the start of their career, 15 to 20 years old. So email is heavily utilized, increasingly so, by a wide swath of people. As a matter of fact, one of the creators of Gmail said something great. He said, email is not going to disappear, possibly ever, until the robots kill us all. And he may be wrong, because robots may still be using email, if the trend holds. So then let's talk about another perception. Is email old? Well, what do you guys think? Is email old? It is. Email's really old, right? In technological years, it's been around for a couple decades in one form or another. So it's old. Maybe the better question to ask is it calcified? Or is it, you know, rejuvenated? Is it young and lively and full of vigor? That picture really freaks me out, by the way, but it seemed to illustrate the point well. So email is not going anywhere anytime soon, as the data shows. People increasingly use it for things that are critical to them in the form of work and personal communication. But if email stays stagnant as far as the way it's built or the way it's utilized, it will eventually become decrepit or calcified. I think it was Abraham Lincoln that said, the best way to predict your future is to create it. And that, in exchange, is exactly what we're trying to do. We are trying to invest heavily to create the future of email so that it continues to be a great tool that's widely utilized. So how do we do this? How do we get our features out into your hands? And then we'll talk about the features in detail. I'm going to show you two what I'll call swim lanes. This top swim lane is the Office 365 swim lane. After we've worked on a feature internally, and we've iterated on it, and we've subjected all of our coworkers to it, and our pre-beta program we like to call dog food, once it's ready for prime time, we immediately push it to the cloud. The cloud customers get all the new features, and they get them first. Right now, we have roughly weekly, sometimes more often, we push new builds to our first-party Office 365 data centers. So that latency between when the time a feature is ready and the time that actual users get to use it on their actual mailboxes has become quite small for us, which is great in that our users get to take advantage of these features more quickly. It's also great because the turnaround time also has a very low latency. When we receive feedback, we can turn around on it very quickly and make the improvements or fix the bugs and get it back out into the hands of users. So a lot of you are likely on-premises customers, or as we used to call them, box product customers. So how does this relate to you? We have a couple release vehicles. The first and most common we call cumulative updates. And essentially what we do is all the features that make sense for on-premises, we bundle them up, and we release them in this regular cadence called cumulative updates. Anyone know how often we release these things? What's that? Quarterly. That's a very good guess. And it feels that way. The true answer is when it's ready, we release them. But we try to have this steady rhythm, and it mostly lines up with quarterly. So that gives customers enough time to become aware of the changes, download the bits, install the bits, deploy them, validate them, and get them in the hands of their users before the next cumulative update. So that's our cadence for CUs. And then we have these service packs that occur again when they're ready. They roughly align to yearly, but sometimes more slowly. The same story holds true. All of the updates until that point in time, plus any interim updates, are packaged, and they're released as part of the service pack. And then, of course, we have our major versions. Major versions, there are certain types of features that we intentionally hold for major versions. Those are typically features that require significant topological changes or significant hardware changes. We find that customers aren't too happy if we push those out on a monthly basis. So this is, from a high level, how the server bits are pushed out to our customers, both in the form of Office 365 as well as on-premises. So then the question is, what about end users? OWA ships with Exchange Server. It follows now the same cadence as the rest of Exchange Server to Office 365, and then spills over into the on-premises releases. And Outlook, we try as much as possible to develop the desktop rich client, as much as possible develop in lockstep with our server product. So why are we building many of the things we're building? And the short answer is because of you. We hear from a lot of you that there are a lot of challenges with email as it stands today. Individual users tell us that they get too much of it. They just can't keep on top of it. Or closely related, there's a varying degree of importance of all the things they get. It runs a spectrum. And a lot of times, it's pretty hard to separate the signal from the noise because there's just plain so much of it. And then, of course, document collaboration. It's been happening for a long time over email. As originally implemented, not well suited to a rich doc collab experience, I would say. That's something we'd like to invest in and change, and we'll talk about how we're starting to do that. Organizations also have a lot of concerns or needs that aren't currently being fulfilled that we're trying to address. One that we hear a lot is, too much of my valuable data is locked inside of a user's private mailbox. Other users should or must have access to it. Other users should or must be made aware of it. and it just doesn't work in the email paradigm today. Another one we hear is, the data keeps growing, the landscape keeps changing, it is really hard to stay compliant, both from a legal standpoint as well as a regulatory standpoint. Something else we're investing in to try and help with. And then finally, we really just need better tools to keep our sensitive data safe, secure, and private. And we're going to talk again about a large number of features that cover and try to address these concerns in various approaches. Okay, there's three groups of features we're going to talk about. I'm going to talk about the first group. It's called Work Smarter. Shorthand is, this is what we're doing to help you work more efficiently and effectively. The second group, social email, Shobhit is going to talk about, and that is, what are we doing to help you work more collaboratively? And then finally, security and compliance. What are we doing to help you work more safely? So hopefully these are logical groupings. Let's start to dive in. Work Smarter, there's several features that I want to talk about. I'm going to go through and talk about these one by one, and then I'm going to do something very exciting and likely fairly stupid. I'm going to demo these features on my actual private mailbox. We'll see how that goes with my actual content. So let's dig in and see what happens. First is people view. When you sit down and talk with users and you talk to them about how they triage their mail, how they determine what's more or less important, when you look at the corpus of research available, by far, the single strongest signal, by no means the only signal, but the strongest signal is who's involved, who has sent the message, who has received the message, and this becomes a very strong signal for how people treat their items. That is the nucleus of this feature. At its heart, it's very simple. Exchange is well aware of your communication patterns. It knows who you send to, how often, what you read, what you don't read. And so we're taking that awareness, and on an individual basis, we're turning it into a fairly simple model of who are most important to you at any point in time. And this changes and evolves over time. And then overlaying that with what are the new and unread messages you have. So you have this very quick and easy way to find very quickly from your most important people the new and unread messages that have landed on your inbox. That's really the core of this feature. And we'll take a look at what it looks like in your inbox in a few minutes. The next is what we call Clutter View. Clutter View takes a more expansive approach to that same problem. It looks at many of the signals that are available. Of course, who's involved, who's received it, but also, organizationally speaking, what are the relationships? What is the content? What are the keywords? Have I contributed? What are the contributory patterns? What's the momentum of a conversational thread? And Exchange uses all that data inside your mailbox to create a very personalized model for you to determine what's important for you based on your previous behavior. It then takes that model, and as new mail comes in, it says, this mail is highly likely to be unimportant or of low importance to this particular user. I'm going to set it in a different place. And everything else goes right to the inbox. So this becomes a very valuable tool for users that receive a large quantity of mail, which is maybe many or most or all of us, of which they receive mail that's of varying degrees of importance. And it picks up on your individualized models and approaches. I'll talk about and show you what this looks like in an actual mailbox. App-rich content. This is a great little feature. Like Doc Collab, links are commonly shared in email, some of which are useful, some of which are appropriate, some of which aren't. But the link itself, oftentimes, I don't know about you, but people who send me links, they don't give me much content or context to go on. They send me the link and say, ha, 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 or you should read this. And so I have no idea what it's about, if I am interested in it, if I may be interested in it, but over the weekend. And so now what Oa and Exchange do is, as you're composing an email, when you insert a link, Oa will go and essentially try and grab and create a nicely formatted, rich preview of that link for your recipients. We'll grab a thumbnail or a frame if it's a video. We'll grab and attempt to compile a title and some initial preview text so that whomever you send it to, whether they're on Exchange or Gmail or Yahoo, they now have that glance ability to say, yeah, this is interesting to me, or this is valuable to me, or man, I better not open that at work. And additionally, now because that text is in there, if it's one of those things like someone a week ago sent me some information about traveling to Spain, that was great. I didn't have time to look at it during my workday. I wanted to look at it over my weekend when I was planning my travel. However, weekend comes, I forget which coworker sent it. I certainly don't remember the URL. I can't find the dang thing. I get so much mail. Now that preview content is also indexed and made searchable along with the link. So not only do you have glanceability, you have retrievability. And it works on the consume end as well. Someone sends you a link, we create a preview for you, again, to give you that glanceability. Search. We hear from users increasingly, search is very critical to how they do email. They're getting a larger and larger corpus of content. They reuse or refer to that content more and more frequently. Being able to find exactly what they want very quickly and easily is a growing need for users. And so we're beginning to invest heavily in search. Some of the first features that have been released are the ones you see on this slide. Number one, now you can finally search your calendar appointments in OWA. Should have been there a while ago. It's there now. You can search your calendar appointments. You can search group calendar appointments. You can search other people's calendar appointments if you have access to their data. Also, we have what we call personalized suggestions. Based on your search history and the content of your mailbox, as you start to type, we will give you suggestions for searches, so you don't have to type the whole thing out. Or we will give you suggested people for whom you may want to search. And it follows you as you go to different computers and so forth. It's associated with your mailbox. It follows you. You get a consistent and useful history and content-based set of suggestions. And then finally, we've created this new, what we call refiner's experience. I was very shocked, actually, the first time I heard it. I joined Exchange a little over 5 years ago, and I sat down with a group of users to talk to them about search. And one of the users said, you know, it'd be really valuable if I could search for the keyword widget, and I could find all the mails that had that keyword from my boss, Julie. And I kind of laughed, thinking the person was being sarcastic. And I said, no, that functionality's been there for a long time. And it caused me to think a bit. And then when I heard it from a second user, it caused me to think a lot that clearly there are some platform capabilities that are well-intentioned and desirable, but the user experience doesn't make discoverable or intuitive or cheap. So Refiners attempts to help do that with query formulation. Again, as your corpus grows, being able to hone in on a specific set of content is really important to help you find what you want and to do it quickly. So as you generate a query, as we return results, we'll also dynamically give you a set of suggestions for further refining that query. People that you may want to narrow it down to, folders, items with attachments, et cetera. And we'll take a look at this. We've also tried to do it in a way that's very intuitive or useful on touch-friendly devices. Search is a particular pain point for touch devices. App enhancements. As many of you likely know, we have an extensibility platform. You can build applications for OWA and for Outlook. And we're continuing to invest in that extensibility platform and that developer ecosystem, as well as the user experience. Now, as an app developer, you can create applications or enhancements for composing messages, as well as consuming or reading messages. The API set is richer. The data that's available is richer. Discoverability in the client is better. The marketplace is better, et cetera. And we'll take a look at that. And then finally, OWA for devices. I'm a gadget freak. I have 7 or 8 Windows phones, 3 iPhones, 2 or 3 Android phones, 10 tablets that run the gamut. And that's great. I love to use them. Sometimes I have to use them for work. And I don't know about you, but for myself and for a lot of users we hear from, the mail applications really leave a lot to be desired. They're not the class or completeness of mail application they've come to expect from their experience with Outlook and Exchange, for example. So we're investing in that area as well. We've now created an OWA app, a rich app for iPads, for iPhones, and Android phones, which is available now. And Shobit, when he does his demos, will actually show you the interface for that app if you've never seen it before. All right, let's take a look at what this looks like in practice. Okay. As I said, this is my actual mailbox. I tried to spend several minutes last night making sure that there was nothing of corporate sensitivity or personal sensitivity in here. I hope I did a good job. If not, I'm sure everyone on the internet will be very respectful of that. So anyway, this is my mailbox. I first want to call out that you can see the people view in the left-hand nav column. These people for me, Exchange is determined, are guys named Jim Edlin, Alex Wetmore, Kareem Batiche. This is a very good list for me. A couple of these guys work for me. One of them is my boss. And another guy, if you were to look in Active Directory, looks like he has almost no relationship to me. But in fact, he's a development lead that I work with very closely on one of the main projects that I'm focusing on. And so this is also a very good choice based on my recent communication patterns. So for example, we're talking about information protection. My boss promised to send an all clear about what we can talk about, and here it is from this weekend. And it talks about the things that we can talk about publicly and disclose in this presentation. And so if you're the type of individual where people are core to how you communicate and how you triage, this people view can become very powerful for you. If there's a particular item like this from a particular center that you're interested in, again, this can be very powerful, a quick way to get a snapshot of things that are most pressing or most important. Okay, let's talk about clutter. So you'll see here that I have, over the last, I don't know, 3-4 days, I've been traveling through Italy with my wife, and I haven't been catching up on mail, so it looks like I have 62 modulo sensitive messages I deleted last night, unread messages in my inbox, and 107 unread messages in my clutter folder. Now, this is a bit atypical. For me, clutter does quite well. On a given day, it will filter out between 30 to maybe 65% of my mailbox. Again, this is atypical. I removed several messages that were sensitive, and so my inbox size is smaller than it normally is. But clutter saves me easily 15 to 30 minutes every day, and some days even a lot more. My typical pattern is I'll come in the morning, I'll start to look through my inbox, the things that have made it through my personalized clutter filter. You know, this is a deck that was sent to me by a team meeting that I always read through, a deck that we're getting ready to present to one of our executives from an engineering manager I work with, recruiting information about the keynote this morning, our party, which we have invites for, if anyone's interested. Now, this one here, this one is clutter. This one's not important to me, which is good. This is a good example. We've built clutter. We've erred on the side of conservatism, talking to users. We've found that it's much better for us to mistakenly put something that's less important or unimportant in the inbox than it is to put something that's really important in the clutter folder. And so as I go through, if I get hundreds of messages a day, I will certainly find a few that are actually are clutter in my inbox. When that happens, I can do one of two things. I can move it to the clutter folder. That will give a very explicit signal to the system. It will learn, hey, messages like this in the future, this guy doesn't want to see. I can ignore it. The system will learn that passively. Or I can right-click on it, and I can just mark it as clutter. System learns from that. The signal's taken, and it's moved automatically into my clutter folder. And as I look down through here, you know, this looks like a very good list. This looks like the list of messages that I would want to go through as my set of important messages to read or respond to through the day. Even Microsoft Store, it's learned that when Xbox games come out, I read and take action on these messages. So even those end up in my inbox, it's learned. Okay, so then let's go over to clutter. For me personally, I will look at, I'm a zero inbox guy. I like to clean everything out when I'm done with it. I will look at my clutter folder daily if I can. If I'm super busy and I've got a lot of mail, I'll do it every few days. Some people do it less often. I have a coworker that literally hasn't looked at his in months. It works very well for him. So I can come in here and again see, when I have time, is there anything that I actually am interested in? And nope, someone's working from home. Someone wants to connect on LinkedIn. Some alerts I'm not involved in, some automated jobs I don't personally read. Yammer Digest, This is a good example. This is something that when I have time, I will read through. But the system's learned that it's not something that I always or often read. It's not something I always or often respond to. And it's certainly not something I respond to or read quickly. So it's picked up on that. It treats it as lower priority, puts it into my clutter box, which works well for me. Let's say I got one of these wrong. So for example, here's an interesting example. This is from Amy Hood. How did we do as a company? Again, typically for me, I don't look at these during the day. I just don't have time. But let's say this is something that I thought was really important. I didn't want to land in my clutter folder. Again, I can right click. I can mark it as not clutter. And system will move it back to my inbox and take that signal to adjust my model appropriately. Take a quick scan here. So these look like good clutter. This looks like this saved me a lot of time of not having to weed through these in my inbox. We also have this quick cleanup feature where I can delete all the messages in clutter, cleans out that folder, and it takes me back to my inbox. So that's kind of the core working model for clutter and its value proposition. Now let's talk a bit about rich content. So as I said, I was very interested in travel information for Spain leading up to this. So let's say I wanted to Spain travel tips. I wanted to send my wife some information ahead of the trip. And I actually looked at this link a few minutes ago because I didn't want to put anything appropriate on the screen. So I believe this one's appropriate. So I find this site. It looks like good information. I want to send it to her. So I can copy that. I can go back to my mailbox. I can create a new message. I can go down to the body. I can embed the link. And there you go. Very quickly, O has gone out. It's found what looks like a nice preview message, a good title, and some good intro text. So my wife can very easily say, yeah, that's something I'm interested in, or that's something I'll be interested in later, and I can easily find it using search. Another feature is we talked about these apps, one that I quite like. So let's see. Martin, a coworker, has sent me a deck to review. Let's say I'm doing something very important, and I want to acknowledge the fact I've received it, but that he shouldn't expect a quick answer. So I go to my apps. It shows you the apps that are installed that I can use for Compose. I go to my templates, and I tell him I'm doing something super important, and he should wait a couple hours before he expects to hear a response from me. And this is great for quick responses or frequent responses that you send, and you can format text and embed images. The point is that through this app ecosystem, it becomes really easy for app developers to push their apps to marketplaces and users, companies to find them, install them, and use them as part of your experience. Line of business applications, custom applications, et cetera. All right. Now, I am in the dog food environment at work, so things are always changing, sometimes multiple times a day. We're doing some stuff with search right now, so I have to go to this special dog food server. You can see a very ugly banner at the top there. We're screwing around with that. But I did want to show you the shipping search experience for OA. As I said, I work on search. So let's say I want to look up some things for search. I type in the character S. You'll see very quickly it comes up with some suggestions, search issues, searching attachments, things I've obviously searched for in the past, as well as individuals. I can look for mail that is from Selva, who's a coworker of mine that I work with quite closely. And you can see that the suggestions will evolve as you continue to type. So I want to get a snapshot of search issues in our service, which is very important to me. And look, incidents or alarms that have been returned. I see this list is still really long. So I want to just look at issues from Michael. He works for me. He does a very good job of kind of sending out status updates. So he's a great person to get a good snapshot from. Again, the list is quite long. Let's say I just want to find items with attachments and so forth. You can see that we've tried to build an experience that, again, is touch-friendly, very discoverable, very easy, intuitive, to help you quickly find what you're looking for. You can scope up, you can scope down, you can manipulate your search very easily without having to know about or remember some esoteric syntax or formulate long query strings. So those, in a nutshell, are the new Work Smarter features that we wanted to highlight. If there's any burning questions about those specifically, I'm happy to take them now. Otherwise, we can pick those up at the end during the question and answer. Go ahead. Do you mind grabbing the microphone? Is that okay? Sorry, I just so that everyone can hear you, I guess.
The people and the clutter features, yes. Are they going to be included in the next release version of Office, or are they already included?
Good. That's an excellent question. Thank you for asking that. So the answer is, as I said, we've shipped these in OWA. We are working closely with the Outlook team on all of the features we've shown you. We don't have anything to announce today as far as availability, but these are all features we work very closely with the Outlook team on. It's an excellent question. Any other burning questions? Yes, sir.
So did we get to the stage that if you're always online, you're better off with OWA than Outlook?
In what sense?
Do I miss anything by not using Outlook, by just sticking with OWA?
That's a great question.
When you didn't have Outlook.
What's that?
But if you go back a few years, OWA would be something great for when you didn't have Outlook
yes.
with you. But did we cross the line? Are we better online now?
No, it's a great question. There is a growing population of our users that actually use OWA overwhelmingly or near exclusively, in some cases exclusively. The vast majority of our users still do use Outlook predominantly, but more and more OWA is becoming a client that people are comfortable living in and not just using in a pinch. And it's certainly that go anywhere, thin, browser available mail experience we know is important to a lot of people and a lot of enterprises. So we invest very heavily in making that a first class experience. Any other burning questions? Okay. Oh, let me steal that from you. Thank you.
For the clutter option, will it be also available to create policies for that so you can retention mail like that's older than 3 months or whatever so you can keep it clean and, yeah, simple?
Sorry, could you repeat that one more time? I understood the last part about retention. I just missed a few of the first words.
For the clutter option, will it be able to create policies so you can delete mail that's like older than 3 months or half a year so you can get it cleaned up because normally users don't really delete it?
Yeah, this is an excellent question. In essence, I'll try and paraphrase. You should shout if I get this wrong. But in essence, is there going to be some type of rules definition capability in conjunction with clutter? And it's a very good question. Let me first say that I was a very heavy rules user. I would say over the last few years, I've probably created between 30 and 40 rules, which demographically speaking, when you look at the data, it makes me a pretty heavy user of rules. Since I've turned on clutter and have been using clutter for the last several months, I created one rule, and it was a client-side rule to, when I was on call, to make text really big and red if it was an alert when I was on call. So that's kind of a long way of saying we've actually tried to design clutter to be a few things. One, to be very simple from a user standpoint. There's nothing actively a user has to do to use it and manage it. And two, to be kind of quite smart and sophisticated to pick up on user patterns. Now, rules still exist. We still obey rules. Clutter will not operate on items for which a rule has been executed against. So there will still be some instances in which we think users won't want to create and manage rules. But in general, our goal with clutter is to take a lot of that onus and complexity and kind of knowledge of interworking exchange off of the shoulders of our users where they don't want to.
I mean it more like organizational level, like talking about retention policies.
Yeah, there's definitely nothing specific in clutter with respect to a organization's retention policy. There's nothing built into the feature at this point. If that's something that's of real interest to you, I'm happy to stick around afterwards and you can kind of tell me your scenario in more detail so I can understand it. So, okay, any other burning questions? All right, I'm going to pass the mic over to Shobit.
Can you guys hear me? All right. So I saw before I started, I saw a couple of you guys taking photographs. So just so you know, the slides are available through the MS TechEd portal. So if you log in online, you should be able to download a copy of the slides. So Tori talked about one of those pillars in which we are investing in, which is really about work smarter. And that's really about how we can make things efficient for you and for your end users. I'm going to talk about the next two pillars, which are around social email and security and compliance. Now, social email is all about how can we make it easier for you to collaborate. And I'm going to talk about certain investments in this area that we have made that you may have heard about, and we'll go through each of them. So first up is groups. Now, before I start with groups, I just had a question for this audience. How many of you have heard about Delve, Office Delve? Okay, that's about 20%. How many of you have heard about groups in general? I think I would say another 20%, same. So before I talk about groups, I just wanted to spend maybe 1 minute on Delve. And Delve is our machine learning scenario that we have built, which will help you identify information that's critical to you. So instead of you going to a place and finding, okay, what's important to you, information will come to you. So you interact today in a variety of modes. You have Exchange, you have SharePoint, OneDrive, Yammer, Link, so many different tools. But Delve really makes it easy because behind the scenes it understands, okay, who are the people you are talking to? Who are you sending those attachments to? Who are involved in your Yammer conversations? And it brings together those experiences into this one single consolidated UI. And Groups is really taking that next one step, which is really about how can we expand Groups which goes across these different workloads. For example, today if you're using Link, you have BuddyList within Link. If you're using Yammer, you have Groups. If you're using Exchange, you have the distribution list. And each of these have different UI, each of these have different ways of creation and how you communicate with them. With Groups, what we are trying to do with Office 365 is unify all those experiences so that you create the groups in one place and that same group travels with you, individual of which workload you're going to. So, and by default, the groups are going to be public, which means anyone can see all the public groups and what are the conversations that are happening inside that group. And the idea here is really simple. We want the information to be discoverable. We want people to go and search for that information, and they should be able to see it. But you can also decide to make that group private. If you don't want that to be shared, you can have a private group just like you would have it in other scenarios. And if you look at the email experience, and by the way, we are going to see some demos as well in just a bit, so stay with the slides. If you look at the group email experience, now we have designed groups in email in such a way that it clearly segregates email versus group conversations. Now, first thing that you'll notice is groups are at the bottom. So on that slide somewhere, groups are below your inbox. And the other key thing that's different is that the conversations are bottom up, which is very similar to the way you have today on social media, like Twitter or Facebook or Yammer, where conversations or responses are inline. So that's why you'll see all the options will be at the bottom. On the screen, that is the reply all button at the bottom, and we'll see that in a bit as well. Now, the other cool thing that's great about groups is your new users can quickly join a new group, and they can see all the past conversations that have taken place. So if I join today in a DL, I can't find that information. But with groups, you can join a group at any time, and you'll still be able to see all the conversations that took place about a year back. So that's a great way to follow up, and new members will find it super helpful. The other thing that the group provides is a unique group calendaring experience. Now, with the group calendar, every member within a group has the right to go and update the calendar. He can change the time of the meetings, he can change the location, and it's really simple because you can also add that same group calendar or a particular meeting invite to your own personal calendar. So if you wanna see who is attending that meeting, who are the members as part of that group meeting, it's all discoverable through the group calendar. And like I said, you can pin them to your personal calendar as well. Lastly, I wanna talk about document collaboration. Now, all of you have probably used attachments every day or the other. Like it's a common thing. Every day you'll send somebody an attachment. But one of the things that we are changing as email is evolving is we want to make sure that your attachment experience is unique. And it's a, you're not working on two different copies of the attachment. You're working on a single copy. So for example, one of the options that we now give you is by default, when you try to upload a document, you can attach that document from OneDrive for Business. Not only that, we actually went a little further. And what you've done now is when you upload a particular attachment, it'll give you an option of whether you want to upload that document to your OneDrive for Business. Now, with groups, what's going to happen is that by default, any attachments that you're sending will be uploaded to the group's OneDrive for Business, because that's going to make sure that each person is working on that unique attachment. Nobody's maintaining their own local files. You're all working on that single attachment. You can see the changes that the other peers are doing in real time with real time co-authoring. So with that, let me actually go ahead and show you some of these scenarios. So I'm going to switch back to my device. So here is one of my demo tenants. And the first thing that you'll notice is that obviously I've logged in with my Outlook web app. And you'll notice that the groups appear on the bottom left. So I have my regular inbox, and I have the clutter folder, just like Tori talked to you about just a few minutes back. And then I have these groups. And I can see the different groups that I am interacting with. I have the marketing campaign group, I have the sales group, and so on. Now, each of these groups has its own feed and conversation. Now, if I click on any of these groups, you will notice that there are already a bunch of conversations that have taken place in this group. I can see, all right, there was a meeting that was sent to me, and this meeting is now currently on my group calendar. I can decide to add it to my personal calendar by simply clicking on this plus button, and it will be added to my personal calendar. At the same time, what you'll notice is the replies are at the bottom. So, for example, if I look at one of the links that Alex sent out, this was about the Microsoft partnership with Adobe a few weeks back, I can respond straight away in line and say, this was great. And straight away, when I send this message, this will be sent in a feed. So for example, all the members within the group will be able to see this information. And because this group is public, all the other people who are not even part of the group, they can still see the feed conversations. Now, I mentioned that a group has a bunch of things. So let me show you what I mean by them. So if I click on this button, it actually shows me that there a group has, let me zoom in a bit so I can see it. Okay, not working. So if you look at the node, you can see the group has its own conversation, a group has its own calendar, it has its own files. These are the files that are uploaded to the OneDrive for Business for that group. Now, over time, you can expect us to build more Office 365 services natively within this group experience. For example, a group might have its own OneNote experience. While taking notes, that will be automatically added here. Or the link experience, or the Yammer experiences. All of them will be part of the group experience overall. I mentioned that the groups are public by default. And if you want to create a group, it's really simple. You can simply click on this plus button, which is on the right here. And it brings up this pane on the right-hand side. And you can, at this point, say, what is a group that you want to create? So I can say at this point, I want to create a tech ed group. And it gives me in real time some information about, yes, this group name is available because it has a unique ID. So I can see that information, it's available. And I can decide at this point whether I want to make it public or I want to make it private. So public would mean, again, that everyone can see this group and everyone can see what conversations are happening in the group. But if I make it private, only the people inside that group can see that information. Now, let's talk about document collaboration. So let me go back. Let's discard this. And I have the other group here. And I mentioned that we make it easier for you to send attachments, and you have different options to you right now. So you can upload those documents straight from your OneDrive for Business. So when I try to open this this option, I can see the files which are already on my OneDrive folder, this OneDrive for Business documents, and I can directly embed them through the process. What I can also do is I can upload a file from my desktop. So let's say I have this Word document. This is a Word document for some of the instructions that I want to send to my group. And I'll get an option where it tells me that, great, you can upload this document as is, that meaning as an attachment, or you can upload this to your OneDrive for Business. If I decide to do it as a upload to group files, that document will be uploaded on to my OneDrive for Business, and it should be able to go ahead and you can work on that on the single copy of the file. The other thing that you'll notice here is I have this another document which I was working on earlier, and this is stored currently on my OneDrive for Business folder. I know it's stored on OneDrive for Business because you see a small cloud icon on the PowerPoint on the logo. And if I try to work on this document, one of the experiences that we have enabled is a side-by-side view conversation. So what you'll notice is in the past, for example, if you're working on Outlook and if you have an attachment, you open that attachment, it takes you to a different experience. It probably opens up that file in Word or Excel or whatever file format that might be. With document collaboration and side-by-side view, you're able to see both your attachment and your mailbox experience in the same view. If I want, I can go ahead and click on this edit and reply, which would basically go ahead and edit that copy in the real time. And at the same time, I can work on the conversation that's happening. Now, think about what's happening here. This is a live conversation. So if I see somebody responding straight away, I can see that Yammer feed come in right on my inbox straight away. So yeah, this looks great, and I can go ahead and send that information. And by default, because this is stored on OneDrive, all my changes will be saved automatically. Let me switch gears here for a bit and show you what it means on the devices. Because Tori mentioned that we have now the same experience, same unique experiences across different devices. And different devices, we have made sure those form factors are unique, and you have that same native touch-based experiences. So this is my iPad, and I'm going to go ahead and open my OWA app. What you will notice is that, yes, you have the regular email. I can click on Outlook, and that takes you to your email experiences. You can go through your different emails that I've gone through. But I can also, and here's a clutter folder at the bottom that you can also see the emails that were caught in the clutter. But you can also do the group conversations right from your OWA app on Android or on your iPad. So I can see the marketing campaign, which is the group that I was just showing just a minute back. And I can go to the other applications or groups as well. And just like my OWA experience on the machine, on the PC, I can create a group right from my OWA app as well. So that's how it looked on the iPad. Let's see what it looks like on the iPhone or on the Android. So I'm going to bring up the Android app. So about 4 months back, we actually launched OWA for Android. OWA for iPhone has been available for more than a year. But just like the iPhone experience and the iPad experience, you get that same native experience on Android tablets as well and devices. So if I click on the OWA app, you would see that straight away you have that same familiar Outlook and email experiences. So I can click on Outlook, go through my documents, I can respond to them in real time, look at what I want to do. And just like the experience on iPad, I can also have the clutter conversations come up on Android as well. If I want to look at any of the groups, I can simply swipe to the right and I can see that same group and same conversation that we saw just a minute ago on the iPad and before that on the PC. So there's that conversation. I can see, yeah, this is looking great. I can respond to this conversation or I can create a new conversation by simply clicking on this plus button. So all the rich experiences that you have available today on PC and on iPhone, they're also available on Android. So let's go back to the slide. Any question on the groups on the demo before we move to our last pillar? So just so you know, there's another session today on enterprise social where we'll talk a lot about groups and delve in much more details. If you're interested, that would be another good session to go for. Any questions before we move on to security and compliance pillar? Any burning questions? Okay, we're going to move on then. Now, let's talk about security and compliance. And there are a couple of key things that I'm going to touch upon here in this pillar. The first thing that I wanted to talk about is something we are calling the Compliance Center. Back in SharePoint conference earlier this year, we announced something called as the Compliance Center. And think of Compliance Center as your one-place stop for all compliance needs. Now, typically, if you have used DLP in Exchange, you'll have to go to Exchange Admin Center. If you're doing e-discovery, you can get to it from Exchange Admin Center or SharePoint Admin Center. With Compliance Center, we are trying to bring together different compliance components within Office 365 so that you can go to this one place and take actions across with Compliance Center. So, for example, we are introducing DLP in SharePoint, which is something that we announced at Keynote and something that we authored in a blog post this morning. So you will be able to go to Compliance Center and set up a DLP policies that goes across Exchange and SharePoint and OneDrive for Business. And over time, of course, as we build more workloads and services, all of them will be accessible by Compliance Center. So you don't have to go to SharePoint Admin Center and put a case on hold and so on. You can do it all through the Compliance Center. Now, some of the services that are listed here are already in flight for to appear in Compliance Center. The only other services that we are going to be adding to this list is going to be the mobile MDM scenarios, something that we announced earlier in the keynote today, MDM for Office 365. So you will see those experiences also come through and appear through the Compliance Center. So that's one place for everything. The next thing that I wanted to talk about is DLP. And it's been quite a journey that we have done with DLP in the last 18 months or so. Back in late 2013, we introduced DLP in Exchange, natively in Exchange Server and in Exchange Online. We provided a bunch of predefined templates out of the box. And again, these went across different geographies and different industries. And we also provided something that we call PolicyTip. Really, it's all about policy education. And what you can do with that is, in real time, you get a user notification when you are trying to send some sensitive information that message is sensitive. Now, that was all released in the first iteration. Back in February earlier this year, we released two new features and some more, but these two were the key ones. The first one was policy tips in OWA and OWA for devices, which means the same policy tips that you would get on Outlook on your PC or your any machine, you now would get that same rich experience on your devices as well. So if I use the Android or I use the iPad or the iPhone, you would get that same familiar PolicyTip experience there as well. The second thing that we launched back in February was document fingerprinting. And think about this as one of your ways to protect your own sensitive content. So this works great for common forms. So for example, in Microsoft, we have a lot of patents, and because we are a technological company. So I can take a sample patent because it has a fixed format, and I can create a fingerprint from it. And any substitute or any derivative document will be able to detect that. And you can, again, take actions based on it, just like you would do to your credit card numbers or any other DLP policies. Now, going forward, and this is a step that we have taken, in fact, back in August, where we really put down our first stepping stone for DLP in SharePoint and OneDrive for Business. And this was really the stepping stone for it, where basically we allowed you to search for sensitive content across your SharePoint Online and OneDrive for Business through your eDiscovery case management. So you can go to eDiscovery, write a query which says, okay, show me all the credit card files which are stored in my organization across different document folders, across different OneDrive for Business document libraries. And you will be able to extract that information. What we are doing next, and this is something that we announced in our blog this morning, is we are taking this to the next step where we are able to provide you policy enforcements. So you can say, if someone tries to upload a document, automatically apply RMS protection to it, or automatically put that document to quarantine so only that user can see it. And over time, you will see us expand that even beyond that. So we'll bring that same rich contextual education that we have for Exchange with PolicyTip with SharePoint as well. So let's say your user is trying to upload a sensitive document to SharePoint Online, and straight away he gets a PolicyTip which says, hey, Mr. User, you cannot upload this document because it's sensitive. You can upload it only if you provide a business justification. And the other thing that we are introducing in this space is we are introducing DLP natively into the Office applications. So think about all the Excel files that you have. Think about all the metadata that's stored within them. And think about how we can bring that experience natively to those Office applications. So let's say you have a user who's working on an Excel document, and let's say that document is sensitive. Straight away, within the application, you'll be able to educate him of the policies saying that this particular information is sensitive and take corresponding actions. Let's say he's trying to save the document to one of a business, and you straight away get a positive there as well. So those are the things that we announced this morning. And if you want to learn more, I highly recommend you to attend the session on, I think that's tomorrow, on DLP. Moving forward is Office 365 message encryption. Now, this was the our latest encryption technology that we introduced earlier in February. And how many people are aware of Office 365 message encryption? Just a show of hands. All right, that's very few. How many people are aware of Exchange hosted encryption? That was the prior technology. Okay, not many. Some I see some hands. So Office 365 message encryption, aka OME, is the next version of EHE, which is the Exchange hosted encryption. And it really is our B2C scenario where, let's say, you want to send encrypted email to someone you don't know where his SMTP address is. He might be on Yahoo, he might be on Gmail, Outlook, doesn't matter. But you still want to send that encrypted statement to him or encrypted email. So a classic example here is a bank who wants to send an encrypted email, or you know, some organization who has to send some sort of consumer email, but it has to be encrypted. Now, when we first released this in February 2014, we allowed a simple integration right within Exchange, and you can send that message. And for the recipients, they were able to authenticate themselves directly with either a Microsoft account or with their organization account, so they're using Office 365. And they'll get that same rich OI experiences. But one of the feedbacks that we heard back from our customers as we deployed the service, and again, this customer also came back, this feedback also came from our existing EHE customers, was they wanted to access those emails without using the Microsoft account. So back in October, just a month back, we released our one-time passcode feature, which is essentially a way for you to, or your, for your recipients to authenticate themselves without using any of our Microsoft account or the organization account. And that's already available, and it's flighted available worldwide. But one of the things that we are proud to announce today is we are launching the apps for iOS and Android. So today you have the rich experiences on Windows Phone because you natively get that encryption. On Android and iOS devices, you can get encryption. You can see those encrypted messages. But you have to install a browser which supports postback because the native browser in those devices does not support postback forms. So for that purpose, we are pleased to announce the apps today, and we'll see them in just a bit. And these apps are targeted to go live end of November, so you'll see them very soon on the App Store as well. Lastly, I wanted to talk about Exchange Online Protection. And it's been quite a journey. I mean, again, just like some of our other services, it's been about 18 months that we have launched Exchange Online Protection. We recently moved all our customers who are on Forefront Online Protection for Exchange onto EOP. And you'll notice that there are a lot of different features that we release over the time, and that was, again, coming from customers who were using FOPay or were moving from different transition services like Postini and so on. But I wanted to spend 2 minutes on some of the future investments we are making here. And I wanted to specifically call out two things here on the list. The first one is our protection against bulk mail. Now, we realize that a lot of spam is bulk in general, and bulk mail in general is something that some users want and some other users hate getting them. So think about a newsletter or a promotion or a coupon. Those are things that some users will prefer to receive in their inbox. Some other users are like, that's probably spam. I don't want to receive it. So one of the things we are introducing very soon is bulk mail controls. So essentially, you'll be able to classify different levels of bulk mail and take actions based on those classifications. EOP has always had bulk mail, but these classifications really help you fine-tune the spam that's reaching your networks. The other key thing that we are investing in right now is around the targeted attack protection. Now, it's a very common industry term, which is around time-of-click protection. So let's say you get an email, and that has a bad link on it, and your user clicks on that link. You want, as an admin, the capability of taking an action based on that click. So those are the things that we are investing in right now. The other example there is something called as the attachment sandboxing. So let's say you get an email which is bad and that's
has malware in it. We basically run that in a sandbox environment instead of running that in a production environment so that it's taken care of before it hits your main production systems. So let's see some of this in action. I'm going to switch back to my device, which is 5. And I am just going to go back to Outlook. And what I'm going to do is, because Sarah already has an admin account, so I can quickly go ahead, leave this, and move into my Exchange Admin Center. So as it loads up, I wanted to show you one of the policies that I have in place today already for data loss prevention. So if I go back to compliance management and go to data loss prevention, I can see already there are some predefined policies that have been set up in my organization. There is a Contoso patent DLP policy, which is basically detecting any sensitive content, which is of the form patents. I also have a PCI policy, which is detecting credit card numbers, and I can see in real time how many hits that policy has had. So let me show you what that rule is doing behind the scenes, because that will tie in with our demo as next steps. So I'm going to go ahead and zoom out this window and bring up the policy here, which is showing up. So I have a policy here where if there are people in my organization and they're sending more than 10 credit card numbers, automatically I'm a little worried about them. I want to make sure that, okay, if you're sending more than 10 credit card numbers, let's at least make sure that I'm educating you. So using policy tips. So that's that first step where you're able to tell the user that go ahead, block the message, but allow them to send with override, meaning they can justify that, yes, this is compliant to my organization policy, and I want to send that message. The other thing we are doing here is we are encrypting that message by default with Office 365 message encryption. And again, you can decide which encryption mechanism do you want to enforce. If you want to enforce RMS, you can totally do that. I think that's worked great for internal company communication. But because this has been sent externally, I do not know who the recipient is. So let me encrypt that with Office 365 message encryption. So let's go back into our demo environment. So I'm going to go back to my Outlook. And now I'm logged in as Sarah Davis, which is a regular account on Office 365. Let's go ahead, and I think I might already have a draft here ready. So let me bring this up. So here is a draft where I was trying to send a document which had credit card numbers, and that document is automatically highlighted and flagged as red, and I can see that on the pop-up window. The other thing you'll notice here is that you get a positive at the top, which is saying this message cannot be sent because it's sensitive. If I click on Show Details, it tells me that, number one, the recipient is external to the organization, so obviously that's a problem. The second thing is the message itself contains the sensitive information. If I want to click on that Learn More link, it'll tell me that that message contains credit card number. Now, what's happening behind the scenes here is we are investigating the message properties. We are looking at the attachment. We are looking at the message body and the subject. And we find that that message contains that sensitive information. So we educate the users in real time, telling them that, hey, what you're doing is wrong. Make sure that you are have the right compliance policies. So now, as a user, I know that, yes, I can send this message because Showbiz is just going to book my tech at booking. So I can go ahead and click on override. And if I do that, that works great. And I can now send this message without a problem. So the message will not get blocked. But behind the scenes, as an administrator, I can always come back and track the message. And I can always see if that business justification was valid or not. Now, this message is sent, but my recipient is somewhere on yahoo.com. I don't control how he's going to access his email. So I'm going to go ahead and sign in as my recipient. So I have my Android device, and I'm using Yahoo email. So I'm going to go ahead and open the Yahoo email. And straight away, you'll notice that the email has arrived on my inbox, and that's the tech at booking. But you'll notice that the message is already encrypted. Now, okay, this message is encrypted. I'm just going to follow the instructions, and which means basically I have to download the attachment in that email. So I'm going to go ahead and click on view, which is how I'm going to view that message. And like I said, we are launching the apps for Office 365 message encryption. So I have the option of selecting that particular app to view that message. So let me choose that map and let's say just once. And straight away you'll see again that this is an encrypted message. Either I can sign in with my Microsoft account or my organization account. But I don't have time for that. I just maybe want to get a one-time passcode. So I have the option of getting that one-time passcode. So I can click on that link at the bottom. And when you do that, that passcode will be sent to you over the email. Let me do that again. Yeah, it actually went through. So the passcode has been sent. And every passcode has a reference code as well. So in this case, the reference code is 0206. Now I can go back to my... oops, that's not the one. I have to do it again. Sorry for that. So let me do this. There you go. Let's get a one-time passcode. And I get a passcode with reference code 9810. I can switch back between my apps. I'm going to go back to my Yahoo email because this is where we'll be sending the passcode. So let's go back into my inbox. Here's the latest passcode that was arrived with reference code 9819. I can tap on this message. Oops. It just wouldn't let me tap it. All right, I'm going to need some audience help, so you're going to remember the numbers. 1854 on the left side, 7199 on the other side. So let's go back to the app. So we're going to enter this now. It's still not showing me. That's interesting. So for some reason, my Android phone doesn't like to show me the app to enter the message. I'm going to try it one last time. If it doesn't work, that's fine. But really, the idea here is that once I enter the passcode, you'll be able to enter, authenticate yourself that you're the direct recipient of this message, and you'll be able to see that message straight away, the encrypted content. So that was a little unfortunate because we couldn't see that, but at least it gets the point across. That we are launching those apps for iOS and for Android. And that's a working build, so that might be some concerns there as well. So with that, I'm just going to switch back to the main screen again. Any questions on security and compliance areas, those things that I showed you? Question at the back. So. Say that again. Apps for encryption are going to be available end of this year. So we are targeting end of November, but depending on App Store timings, that's how they'll be available. Any other questions before we move on? So just a few things. I think here are some sessions that I think we would recommend you to go and attend. You have the Microsoft Roadmap for Enterprise Social, where you'll talk a lot more about the groups and social elements that are coming to email. There's the hybrid deployment session. There's also a performance session that we recommend you go and attend. There are also some sessions on the security and compliance areas, like the DLP or the encryption. And finally, of course, there's a deploy Microsoft Exchange Server 2013 session as well that you can go and attend. Some other resources that you can refer to if you have time. And finally, do make sure that you send us your evals, and that'll help us improve our sessions. I do have some party passes, by the way, so if you have some questions, you do on these. And the floor is open for any questions that you may have. No questions? Okay, there's a question at the back. Can you be a little louder, by the way? Okay. Signature for emails and policies.
Yeah. Oh, well, not today, but that's a good feature request. I would love to connect with you offline if that's a scenario that we can look into. Okay. Yeah, go ahead. Yep. It will be part of 365.
Sorry?
365. Are you asking the licensing or? Yeah. Yep. Yep. No, that's the specific OneDrive for that group. So. I have to check on the licensing piece of that. Yeah, go ahead.
Can you clear the group from the ID center?
I couldn't hear that.
Can you clear the groups from the ID center?
Can you clear the groups from?
Yeah. Exchange admin center.
Oh, so groups are not the admin driven. They are more driven from the users. So it's end user driven. So, yeah. You would be able to, but not in the not current in our current state. I think now it's managed through more from the end user centric. It's only on OWA right now. Only on OWA, not on Outlook. Yeah. Just via OWA as of now. That's a great question. I think right now in the first phase, I think the compliance are going to be limited because you have the. There are some compliance things that you can obviously do, but like for example, you can do e-discovery searches with your email inbox. Those are things that you cannot do today with groups, but over time we'll add on those capabilities as well. Okay, there's a question at the back. Sorry, can you be louder? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the vision going forward. I mean, we have already integrated some of the key components from SharePoint and OneDrive for Business, but you'll see a lot more in that path. And not just SharePoint, but also beyond SharePoint into Link and Yammer and those sort of workloads. You'll see a lot of those come into our group story. No timelines, though. Okay, any more questions? Well, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate all you've been here and look forward to your feedback. Thank you.